Hey, good afternoon, everybody, and thank you for coming to learn together once again in this series, which we've gone a couple of months since we had our last installment of great Rebbeim and great Talmidim. So I asked one of my dear friends and Talmidim what he thinks, which set of Rebbeim and Talmidim I haven't done yet that really demand attention. And he suggested a number of Rishonim, but we've really shied away from doing Rishonim. We've been trying to stick to more recent generations. And one area or one group of people that have not been represented yet in this series are the group of Svardim, and it's a great Svardic Gedolim. And particularly when one talks about Svardi Gedolei Yisrael, one always thinks of Rav Avadia Yosef immediately. What is less known, probably to most, certainly Ashkenazi people, or most Americans, is that Rav Avadia Yosef had a great Rebbe, who he would constantly refer to in his tshuvos as Mephibosheth Rabbi. He would always refer to Rav Ezra Atiya as his Rebbe. So I would like to spend some time discussing Rav Ezra Atiya and his unique influence on Rav Avadia. And maybe we'll spend a little more time talking about Rav Ezra than Rav Avadia, because everyone knows everything about Rav Avadia, or a lot of people know a lot more about Rav Avadia than they know about Rav Ezra. My primary sources for all of the information that I have over here was, first of all, there was a Mishpacha magazine article on Rav Ezra's 46th yard site, where they interviewed Rav Ezra's son, Rav David, and he had a lot of fascinating recollections about his father. Rav David at the time was already 87 years old, but he had a lot of recollections about his father. Also, from the Hebrew biography of Rav Avadia Yosef, called Abir Haroim, I was only able to locate in my house Chelek Aleph, but I looked up from the index. Every time it quoted Rav Ezra Atiya in Abir Haroim, Chelek Aleph, it was written while Rav Avadia was still alive, and Chelek Aleph only, it was written by a grandson of Rav Avadia, and only covers the first 30 years of Rav Avadia's life. And then the third source that I used a lot is a book that someone gave me on Erev Shabbos. Rabbi Chaim Jachter just sent me a copy of his wonderful sefer called Bridging Traditions. This is the sefer. It is Rabbi Jachter is an Ashkenazi rabbi of a Sephardic shul and has been for a few decades. So this book is called Bridging Traditions, Demystifying Differences Between Sephardic and Ashkenazic Jews. Now, he does not have a chapter on Rav Ezra Atiya, but in the back of the book, he does have a chapter on many of the other great Sephardic poskim of the latter part of the 20th and early part of the 21st century. So he clearly has a chapter on Rav Avadia and many of Rav Ezra's other Talmidim. So I use that a lot as well to highlight some of the differences between some of the Talmidim of Rav Ezra. So let's get right to it. Let's talk a little bit about Rav Ezra Atiya. Rav Ezra Atiya was born on Tu B'Shvat in 1885. He was a Syrian Rav. He was born in Aleppo. It was then part of the Ottoman Empire. His parents had lost several children in infancy that had died in infancy, and they were hoping to have Ben Shel Kayama. They were hoping to have a child that could survive, and they went to Davin by the Kever of the Navi Ezra. And then they found out that she was pregnant, and when the child was born, a boy, they named him after Ezra, from Navi, and they wanted to raise him in such a way that he would dedicate himself to Torah above all else. He also had a brother named Eliyahu. His father was a Melamed. His father was a Talmud Chacham also, and was a direct descendant of Rav Shem Tov Atiya, who was a student of Rav Yosef Cairo of Maran the Mechaber, the Shulchan Aruch. When Rav Ezra was a child, the Rabbanim of Aleppo told his father that he was an exceptional learner. He was 11 years old. His Malami told his father that he's outgrown the yeshiva that he was in, and that he needed to find a new place in order to really maximize his potential. When he was 16 years old, his family moved to Yerushalayim, to the Ir HaAtika, and a number of Syrian families and Rabbanim had gone there, and soon after they finally made their way to Eretz Yisrael, his father had died. So his mother was an almana. They had no money, and she had two children. She had Ezra and Eliyahu, and they were very, very poor. So his mother would work as like a housekeeper for wealthy people, and this young Ezra Atiya decided he was going to dedicate his entire life to Talmud Torah. So he would learn and daven, and he would just sleep on a bench in a small base medrash in Yerushalayim. Rishonim, and he would just cover, you know, a lot of ground in terms of accomplishing a great deal in learning. But he had very little to eat. He was almost starving. Every night his mother would bring him some dry pita that had a little bit of salt on it, and sometimes they were lucky enough to have an egg, and his mother would bring the egg to the Beis Medrash where he was learning and would share it with him. And he said that that learning that he did, mitoch hadchak, is what really made him what he became. In 1907, when Rav Ezra was just 22 years old, Yeshivat Ohel Moed was established in Yerushalayim, and he was asked to become one of the Rebbeim in the yeshiva, and he did. And together with some of the other Rebbeim, he became a Magid Shir. In 1909, he got married, so he became a Rebbe when he was still single. He got married in 1909 to the daughter of a famous Mekubal, and in 1911, he had a child, but the child died as an infant. And then when World War I broke out, the Turkish army mobilized, and they would take all able-bodied men that they could to join in the war effort. And Eliyahu, Rav Ezra's brother, died of pneumonia in the Turkish army. So a number of the Sephardic Gedolim at the time, Rav Chaim Shaul Dweck HaKohen and Rav Avraham Edis, smuggled Rav Ezra to Egypt, and they used a Russian passport to get him to Egypt, because at that time Russian passports did not require a photograph. So they were able to get a fake Russian passport and get him out into Egypt, and that's where he settled in Cairo for some time. He tried to go into business in Cairo, it didn't work out. He was not a very good businessman, and then he met a wealthy refugee who knew him from Yerushalayim and who was willing to back him in starting a yeshiva. So he started a yeshiva called Ava V'Yachva in the basement of the Rabbanut of Cairo, and the yeshiva had 100 talmidim, and a lot of them had no real background in Torah and in Yiddishkeit, and he gave to shiurim to balabatim, and he was a dayan in the Beis Din in Cairo. And then after the war ended, his wife joined him, and they went back to Yerushalayim in 1922. They moved back to Yerushalayim. But that was very critical, the fact that he spent some time in Cairo, because years later, when his Talmud, when his prized Talmud, Rav Avadia Yosef, was offered the job as the chief rabbi in Cairo, as the chief rabbi in Egypt, he didn't want to go. And Rav Ezra said, no, I've been there. You could do a lot of good there. He's the one that encouraged young Avadia Yosef to go to Cairo and become a rabbi in Egypt. Now, there were many times throughout his tenure as Rosh Yeshiva in Parat Yosef where the yeshiva had to move because of all sorts of political upheaval and other things. During the 1948 Arab-Israeli War, the yeshiva was evacuated to different shuls in Katamon and Geula and Bukharim, you know, all these other neighborhoods. And the main yeshiva building in the old city at that time was burned to the ground by Jordanian troops, and thousands of his writings were burnt along with it. Now, that is critical, because one of the reasons why we know Rav Avadia so much more than we know Rav Ezra is because Rav Ezra never really published anything. Rav Avadia published an enormous amount. In fact, if you look at the biographies of Rav Avadia, both the Hebrew biography, Abir Haroim, as well as the Art Scroll biography of Rav Avadia, you will find that an actual piece of paper, they have a picture of the actual piece of paper, when Rav Avadia was 15 years old, he sat down and he wrote a list of all the svarim that he plans to write during his lifetime, and then he spent the next 80 years writing them. It's a remarkable idea of setting a goal and then just going out and accomplishing that goal that Rav Avadia did. Rav Ezra was never able to have that impact, because all of his writing, he had thousands of pages of writing. He believed in writing, but it was all destroyed when the Jordanians burnt down the yeshiva, Parat Yosef, and he took that as a siman min hashamayim, whether he should have or shouldn't have, but he took that as a siman min hashamayim that these were never meant to be published, and he therefore never bothered even rewriting all of these notes. So his legacy was not so much his writing, because his writing didn't survive. His legacy, more than anything else, was his talmidim. In the middle 1950s, Parat Yosef joined together with the Gerer community, and they bought a plot of land in Geula, and the yeshiva and the Gerer Beis Medrash were built side by side in Geula. The original yeshiva campus in the old city was rebuilt and reopened after Rav Ezra's passing. Rav Ezra died in 1970, and in the 70s, that's when Parat Yosef was rebuilt in the old city. So who was Rav Ezra Atiyah, other than all these biographical information, which is nice to know? But what about his godless? What was his shita in learning? What did he accomplish in learning? So when Rav David Atiyah was asked what he most remembers about his father, he said, you know, and after all, his father is one of the greatest Torah teachers in Eretz Yisrael, he said without hesitation, his learning. He didn't waste a minute. I mean, if you ask most people about Rav Ezra Atiyah, people who are familiar with him, they'll tell you about his dedication to his Talmidim, his tzidkus, but his own son said more than anything else, his learning. He didn't waste a minute. I'm reminded of when I brought my Talmidim last year to Rav Yisrael Reisman, and they said, tell us about Rav Palm. He said, you're not going to be happy if I tell you about Rav Palm, because you're going to want me to tell you how Rav Palm was like a Zaydi who was so sweet and kind and whatever. And it's true, he was a very nice person, but that's not what I think of when I think of Rav Palm. I think about a person who developed klalim and halacha, and who was a masmid atzum. So that's what Rav David Atiyah thought of Rav Ezra. Yeah, everyone else thinks about what a sweet, nice person he was, and the mesirus nefesh he had for his talmidim. He said, I think first and foremost of how Rav Ezra would never waste a moment from learning. But it was his style of learning that was also unique. People, Bachrim, sometimes from the Panovich Yeshiva, from other yeshivas, would come to talk to him in learning, and they'd have all these kashas. You know, when you go visit a gadol, you're like, you collect all of your kashas, and you come to ask the gadol all your kashas on learning. And Rav Ezra would always do the same thing. Instead of answering the kashas, he would say, let's take a look at the sugya again. And he would learn through, word for word, the Gemara, the Rashi, the Tosos, the Marsha, and through just learning every word carefully, he would just show that the kashas weren't kashas to begin with. That if you learned everything carefully enough and slowly enough, and you paid attention to every word and every letter, that was his mahalik. He would show that the kashas weren't kashas to begin with. Rav Vadi was actually frustrated with the Derech HaLimud in the yeshiva because he felt that it was too slow, that they didn't cover enough ground. But as a teacher of Torah, Rav Atiyah was personally involved in every student in the yeshiva. He would test the younger Talmidim every couple of months. He would give a daily shir to the older Talmidim. He would give a night shir to the Kolel. He gave a weekly Sichas Musar. He would always walk around with a Chovas Halvavos. That was his sefer of choice. Rav David Atiyah said that his father was really created like a revolution in Cairo. He would teach Gemara to young people, and he would teach Maseches Avodah Zarah. And people asked him, Maseches Avodah Zarah, that's the first thing you're teaching them? He said, yes, because these people are beginning to assimilate, and the first thing they need to know is Bishalakum, is Stam Yenam, is all of the halachas that we have in order to prevent assimilation. That was the primary thing. And these young Talmidim would go home, and they would share with their families what they learned about, and that created this revolution of greater Shmiras HaMitzvos in Mitzrayim. And they would tell their parents things like, don't put a liquid dish on the hot plate, or whatever. They didn't have hot plates, but on the warming on Shabbos, and how to kasher a liver properly, and all of these things that they would learn from Rav Ezra. He was also very well respected by other Gedolei Hadar, by other Gedolei Torah. They say that after visiting him once, Chazon Ish said that that Rav Ezra has the koach of svara like a rishon, meaning he was referring specifically probably to his style of learning, that he'd go back to the sugya and just read the words carefully, and was able to be so medayik in the words that it was ki'ilu he was a rishon. He was also, though, a tremendous baki, not only great in iyun, but he had a tremendous bikius, like the style of most other svara gedolim who were great bikius. When Rav Vadia spoke at Rav Ezra's Levaya, he said that Rav Ezra knew the entire Chush and Mishpat Bal Peh. The stipler used to send questions sometimes on issues relating to the Tzibur to Rav Ezra, because he trusted his ability to analyze things in a very clear way. But above that, beyond that, he was also known for his incredible dedication to his Talmidim. He was like a father to his Talmidim. His son Rav David said that there were 7 children. They were always very poor. And when his father Rav Ezra would get his salary from the yeshiva, needy people would wait for him on his way home, and he would give gave away half his salary before he even got through the front door. And that was after some of it had already been deducted from the paycheck to pay tuition for the poor bachrim in the yeshiva who couldn't afford tuition. One of his greatest accomplishments was changing the way that yeshiva education was looked at in the Sephardi world. Full-time Torah learning past the age of bar mitzvah was virtually unheard of in the Sephardi world before Rav Ezra Atiyah changed that. He did everything he could to make sure that boys would be able to learn into their teenage years, not kailel into their 20s or whatever like we think of, into their teenage years when they're 14, 15, that they should still be able to learn. And great Mesiras Nefesh, he gave up from his own salary in order to pay for the tuition for some of these boys. He would always ask the Talmidim if they ate enough. He was always concerned that they should have proper nutrition. He gave tremendous attention to each of the Talmidim. He was a tremendous anav also. You know, they say that one of his trademarks was that he would clasp Talmud's hand when he was talking to him. You know, sometimes someone shakes hand, and sometimes just he clasps the hand and would hold on to the Talmud's hand as a sign of fondness or as a sign of admiration for the Talmud. I remember once I was talking to Rav Binyamin Kamenetsky, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, Rav Yaakov's son, who was the key founder of the Five Towns community. And you know, in his older years, in his later years, he really was just, you know, on a nachas tour pretty much. You know, he'd look around at all the shuls and the yeshivas and everything else and all the nachas that he got. And I, as a graduate of South Shore, he was very proud that I became a rav in the community. And I remember just talking to him, and the whole time I was talking to him, he was just holding my hand. Rav Binyamin was just holding my hand the whole time with both of his hands, and there was like this sense of affection. That's what Rav Ezra had for all of his Talmidim. Who were his primary Talmidim? So clearly Rav Avadya Yosef, but really, it's if you were a Sephardic Gadol in the later part of the 20th century, the chances are you were a Talmud of Rav Ezra Atiyah. Everyone came from Rav Ezra Atiyah. Rav Avadya Yosef, Rav Ben Tzion Abba Shaul. Rav Avadya once explained the godless of Rav Ezra by saying that the greatest ma'ayin in the generation was Rav Ben Tzion Abba Shaul. He had the greatest koach of iyun, and he would bring his most difficult questions to Rav Ezra, and Rav Ezra was the address for answers. Rav Yitzchak Kaduri, the great Mekubal, was a Talmud of Rav Ezra Atiyah. Rav Mordechai Eliyahu was a Talmud of Rav Ezra Atiyah. Rav Yehuda Tzadka was a Talmud of Rav Ezra Atiyah. All of the great Sephardic Gadolim were Talmidim of Rav Ezra Atiyah. So let's talk a little bit about Rav Avadya. I don't want to spend too much time on Rav Avadya because we know so much about Rav Avadya. I'll just share with you some of the ideas that Rabbi Jachter has in his book, Bridging Traditions, which I highly recommend, put out by OU Press and by Magid Press. Rabbi Jachter wrote over his Hespit for Rav Avadya. And in his Hespit for Rav Avadya, he did it in the style of Dayenu, that if Rav Avadya only accomplished this, Dayenu, if he had only accomplished that, Dayenu. And he highlighted seven extraordinary accomplishments that Rav Avadya had. First of all, Rav Avadya's incredible knowledge and incredible memory. When they needed to access the Parish of the Rashba in Maseches Erevin in the Vatican Library, and the Vatican didn't allow any pictures to be taken of it, they sent Rav Avadya in to read the Parish of Rashba in Maseches Erevin, and then he came out and he wrote it over word for word. He has a tshuva about Dud Shemesh in Yabia Omer Chelik Dalet or Chaim Simon Lama Dalet, where he quotes in a single tshuva more than 500 separate sources in a single tshuva in Yabia Omer. It's just stunning, the array of Marim Kamos and the knowledge that he had. Second was his Koach HaPsak. He had a tremendous Koach Da'ateira. Third, meaning that was unusual, meaning many people, their style of Psak is to try to be Yotze Kaladeos. In fact, that's one of the major differences between the style of Rav Avadya and Rav Mordechai Eliyahu. Rav Mordechai Eliyahu thought that we should only be Mekel on, you know, for things B'Shas Adchak, otherwise we should try to satisfy all opinions. Rav Avadya did not see it that way. Rav Avadya thought that the Koach Da'ateira was a very valuable Koach to take advantage of. Rav Vadya's third extraordinary accomplishment was his abilities as a dayan. He was matir thousands of mamzerim and agunos. There's a famous story when Rav Vadya delayed a heart surgery that he was scheduled to have to undergo because he had to finish writing a tshuva to be matir an aguna, and he was nervous that if he dies on the table, no one else is going to be matir the aguna. So he said, and he knows it's an emergency surgery, but this is also an emergency. And he spent a couple of more hours finishing up that tshuva to be matir the aguna. Fourth, his connection with the masses. Rav Vadya was known by all of Israeli society. A million people showed up at his levaya, and he had a sense of humor. He knew how to talk to people. He wrote not only Abia Omer, which is something that talks to the scholar. He wrote Tshuvas Yechav Adas, which was basically from his radio show. And if you want to develop a good halacha curriculum for high school students, my friend Rabbi Shai Shachter once said that he feels the way that halacha should be taught in high school is by learning Yechav Adas, meaning it's easy, anyone can read it, and it so clearly shows you the development of halacha from the pasuk to the gemara to the rishonim to the halacha to the achronim. So his ability to connect to the masses was extraordinary. Fifth, Rabbi Jachter highlights his ability to restore the prestige of Sephardic Jewry. Whereas Sephardim in certain circles were viewed as second-class citizens, Rav Vadya didn't have to take a back seat to anybody, and everyone knew that. Lahachzir HaTorah LeYoshna. People came to Rav Vadya. Rav Vadya didn't have to go to other people. Whether they be Ashkenazi Gedolim or Sephardi Gedolim, everyone knew that Rav Vadya was the Baki Hador. There was no one that was Lohiniach Kamoso. There was no one like him. Sixth, he had this ability, he worked very hard on unifying Sephardic practice under Maran Beit Yosef. That instead of having 17 different Sephardic communities from 17 different countries have all their different minhagim, and the Moroccans do what they do, and the Syrians do what they do, and the Iraqis do what they do, Rav Vadya said, in Eretz Yisrael, Maran Beit Yosef is the Maran Da'asra, and we should all follow Maran Beit Yosef. Not everyone agreed with him, and there was obviously a lot of pushback about that, but that's what Rav Vadya believed in. And then the final highlight of Rav Vadya that Rabbi Jachter highlights is his dedication to educating children. Meaning he saw that a lot of the Sephardi people who were no longer religious were still very traditional. They would still light Shabbos candles, they would keep some semblance of kosher, they would celebrate Yom Tovim, things like that. However, he knew that that is not a recipe for lasting success, that that will last a generation or two, and that he needed to capitalize while they were still traditional in order to get them to be frum, to be Shomer Torah Mitzvos again. And therefore, he started a whole political party, and a lot of people didn't like his politics, and there's a lot to criticize about his politics. But the point of the whole thing was to be able to support the Torah institutions that he started, particularly for young children, meaning Rav Vadya realized very brilliantly that government can accomplish a lot more than individuals can. I mean, when we talk about funding an institution, so we talk about making a major donation or this and that. The amount of money that government has access to be able to provide kosher meals for the students, to be able to provide other things that, you know, the education for the students, to be able to say Kriya Shema, things like that, that he was able to arrange for in the Shas schools was very, very significant. And he was a power broker in the Israeli government, which is something he only did in his later years. In fact, I recall when I first read the Sefer Taharas Habayis, Taharat Habayit, Rav Vadya's Sefer on Hilchos Nida, which he wrote when he was like 20 years old. It's an encyclopedia on Hilchos Nida, but he only published it when he was like 80. So in the introduction to volume 2 of Taharat Habayit, Rav Vadya writes that he had a dream once. He wasn't sure whether he should go into politics or not, and he said that he had a dream that he was visited by the Ben Ish Chai, and the Ben Ish Chai pulled off a Yabia Omer from his shelf, and he started flipping through the Yabia Omer, and the Ben Ish Chai said, "Very good, this is very, very nice." So Rav Vadya said, "Yeah, but I don't know what to do, because I want to stay in learning and dedicate myself to my writing and my teaching, but I feel that there's a need for me to go into politics, and I don't know what to do. What should I do?" And the Ben Ish Chai said to him in a dream that Gamze v'gamze niskayim biyadcha, that you'll be able to accomplish both. And Rav Vadya took that that dream as a simon hashamayim, that that's what he should do, and he went into politics also in the last 20 years of his life or so. Now, what was Rav Ezra's impact on Rav Avadia? So there is a very famous story. The story is that Rav Avadia, like many young Sephardic students at the time, was needed after his bar mitzvah to help out in making a parnasa for his family. And his father owned a small grocery store and was having trouble making ends meet. And he told Rav Avadia that you can't go to yeshiva anymore. You need to come help me in the grocery store. And Rav Ezra noticed that Rav Avadia wasn't there for several days. And Rav Ezra, you know, tried to find out what was going on, and he was told that that Rav Avadia was needed in the grocery store. So Rav Ezra begged Rav Avadia's father, please, let him go to yeshiva. You have no idea how special your son is. And Rav Avadia's father wasn't having it. He said, I need him. I need to make ends meet. So the next morning, when Rav Avadia's father came to the grocery store, Rav Ezra was there in an apron, in a work apron, and Rav Avadia's father said, Rosh Yeshiva, what are you doing here? And Rav Ezra said, well, Avadia came to work, and I told him, don't worry about it. We found someone else who's willing to work for free, and I sent Avadia to yeshiva, and I'm here, I'm willing to work for free so that Avadia can go to yeshiva. And Rav Avadia, that could have backfired. That was a ploy that could have backfired. But Rav Avadia's father got the message, and he let Rav Avadia go back to yeshiva, and of course he let Rav Ezra go back to yeshiva as well. When I mentioned this story yesterday, Rabbi Yehuda Balsam told me that there was an Israeli television program that interviewed members of Rav Avadia's family, and one of the family members, I don't remember if it was a sister or a daughter, said that that story, as famous as it is, was actually not true. That the truth is that Rav Avadia's father wanted him to work in the store, but he discovered that Rav Avadia was so shakua in his learning, that he was so distracted by his learning, that people were just stealing things from under his nose constantly. So he was like the worst worker ever. So he was sort of fired and sent back to yeshiva, which to my mind is an even better story than, maybe it's not as good a story about Rav Ezra, but it's an even better story about Rav Avadia. Rav Ezra Atiya said that if the whole yeshiva Parat Yosef was founded just to produce one Rav Avadia Yosef, it was worth it. In fact, when one of the senior Rosh Yeshiva, not senior, when the previous Rosh Yeshiva of Parat Yosef died at a very young age, Rav Eliyahu Lapas, I think is his name, I'm not sure how to pronounce it, when he died at the age of 48, all of the Ziknei Yeshiva were maspid him at the Shloshim, and Rav Avadia was 17 years old. And Rav Ezra pushed a 17-year-old Avadia to give a hespid. And Rav Avadia tried to refuse because all the Ziknei Yeshiva were giving hespid, but Rav Ezra pushed him until ultimately he gave a hespid, and the hespid is remarkable. It is a poem that he wrote that has, I think it's like 9 paragraphs, and each paragraph, no, it's 11 paragraphs, and each paragraph starts with the word kol, like kol barama, and ends with the word Eliyahu, and every phrase in the paragraph is a phrase from either Tanakh or from Chazal. It's poetry, and it's absolute bekius. You can find this poem in the end of the Chazon Avadia in Hilchas Avelos in Chelek Gimel on page Resh Nun Dalet. To think that a 17-year-old wrote it. Rav Avadia happened to have been an extraordinary poet. He had a tremendous koach in that area. Sometimes he would write haskamas to svarim, and the whole haskama is written in poetry. He just had this tremendous, tremendous koach. If you want to get a sense of how much respect Rav Avadia had for his Rebbe Rav Ezra and Rav Ezra had for his Talmud Rav Avadia, open up Yabia Omer Chelek Vav Evna Ezer Simen Hay, and you'll see the salutation that Rav Ezra writes to Rav Avadia. How does Rav Ezra write to Rav Avadia, dear Rabbi or dear Talmud? What does he say? He says, Yedid nafshi va'or eini, Yoshev b'seder elyon, Zach ha-seichel va'arayon, Harav ha-gon ha-muflo v'kvod Hashem malei, Sinai va'oker harim, Ha-meir la-aretz v'la-darim, Piryo kodesh hilulim, Malei ruach ha-chmovina, Mar dayana, Dinochus lo'um kadidina, Pem mapik margolios, Doresh kisrayosios, Gibor b'milchamta shel Torah, Harav ha-gadol ma'od, U'megadol k'morenu harav, Rav Avadia Yosef shlita. Not to be outdone in showing respect, Rav Avadia responds, Morenu ga'onu zenu, derufkas adar raisa, haminora hatahora zaka ubara, ga'onu zenu vitifartenu, sara torah ner Yisrael, patish achazak, amuda yamini, ama'ora gadol v'amufla, bekesem paz lo yisula, gale amikto, mistatra nuvinahura ameshari, k'morenu harav Rav Ezra atiya shlita. Just the couple that they didn't have enough adjectives to describe each other in the way that they spoke about each other. In his Hesped for Rav Ezra, Avadia said that Rav Ezra embodied all 48 Kinyanei Torah that we're working on now in this period of Sfiras HaOmer. When Rav Avadia was 26 years old, Rav Ezra told another Rav in Parat Yosef, take a look at this Avreich, this 26-year-old Avreich, because in another 10 years, he's going to be as great as Rabbeinu Yosef Chaim, as the Ben Ish Chai. Rav Ezra would send Rav Avadia the most difficult shilas of Mamzerus, Chalitza, abortion, even though Rav Ezra was the Rebbe, Rav Avadia was the Talmud. When Rav Avadia was asked to go to Egypt, he was hesitant, but as I mentioned before, what was his hesitancy? Because he was afraid he wouldn't be able to learn, because where's he going to find a proper library in Egypt that has all the books that he's going to need? And Rav Ezra said, no, I was in Egypt. I spent time in Cairo. There's a beautiful Sifriyat there. You'll have access to many Sfarim. And that's what convinced Rav Avadia to go when he heard that he'll be able to continue learning that there's a Sfarim library. Rav Avadia used to encourage people to live in Yerushalayim, even outside the old city. And that was based on something that Rav Ezra had said. Rav Ezra had said that the Medrash tells us that kalakover bi Yerushalayim ki kover tachas kisei hakavod, that being buried in Yerushalayim is like being buried under the kisei hakavod. But the halach is you're not supposed to bury in the Era Atika. So says Rav Avadia, you see in the name of Ezra that the entire Tchum of Yerushalayim also has the status of Yerushalayim, like when it comes to Mikra Megillah, it also has the status of Yerushalayim to some extent, and therefore there's a Maila in living even in the new city of Yerushalayim, not only in the old city of Yerushalayim. So this was a little bit about the relationship between Rav Avadia and Rav Ezra. What we did not get to explore, because we're out of time right now, is how it is that Rav Ezra had so many Talmidim who were so very different in their styles of learning. Rav Avadia's Piskei Halacha had nothing to do with Kabbalah. He wanted nothing to do with Kabbalah in Halacha. Rav Mordechai Eliyahu, his Piskei Halacha were a perfect fusion of Kabbalah and Halacha. And then you have Rav Kaduri, who is not really Osik in Halacha. His entire contribution was all in Kabbalah. Such different people, such different styles. Rav Tzion Abba Shaul with his Iyun, more so than his Bekius, such different styles, and they were all products of Hagon Rav Ezra Atiyah, Zecher Tzadik Levracha. Thank you, everyone. I think there's one more in this series of Rebbeim and Talmidim. I think next month we have one final one to wrap up the year. If you have suggestions of what I should do, right now I think I'm leaning toward doing Rav Soloveitchik and Rav Shachter as the final part of the series, but if anyone has other suggestions, I'm always open to suggestions. Everyone have a wonderful day.